Radicalism and the French Revolution. From 1789 to 1815, events in France stimulated intense political debate within Britain and deeply polarised public opinion on the question of reforming the British Constitution. In this lecture, I want to look particularly at the thinkers behind the changes in radicalism in the 1790s. And also the development of a popular conservatism in this period. The radicalism of the 1790s had much in common with the reform movement of decades earlier, but the stimulus of the French Revolution did produce some changes. The movement now spread further down the social scale and was influential in a wider geographical area, not merely confined to the capital. Some radicals still campaigned for the programme of parliamentary reform that had been advocated by reformers in the 1780s, basing their claims on the historic rights of Englishmen. But political ideology was evolving, and radicals were beginning to pursue a new liberal ideal. The debate began in 1789, when Dr. Richard Price, a Unitarian minister, preached a sermon called On the Love of Country to commemorate the passing of the Bill of Rights a century earlier. In this sermon, he argued that the French Revolution had opened up new possibilities for religious and civil freedom, and Price spoke of his doctrine of perfectibility, that the world can be made better through human effort. This doctrine was the theological and philosophical justification for social reform, for striving in this world for social change. The responses to the sermon are perhaps better known than the sermon itself. Edmund Burke was appalled at the substitution of the rights of man for the rights of kings, for the institution of liberty at the expense of traditional authority. He responded with his reflections on the revolution in France and answered and denied Price's assertion of natural rights and his doctrine of perfectibility. Burke regarded the French Revolution had occurred as a consequence of the interactions of three separate interests. First, the so-called literary cabal, as represented by philosophers such as Rousseau and Voltaire, people who were determined to attack religion and with it the entire establishment. Secondly, he argued that there were a group of politicians who wished to build France into a world power and had considered the best way of doing this was via a republic. And thirdly, he apportioned some blame to the government of Louis XVI. As a consequence, for Burke, France was out of control and incapable of correcting itself. He likened it to a madman who, to be cured, first had to be subdued, and foresaw four consequences of the revolution. He predicted a deterioration into military government. He thought that as her strength grew without check, France would start to attack her neighbours. He argued that only outside intervention could reverse the situation. And therefore, he suggested that the nations of Europe, in defence of their own interests, should launch a preemptive invasion of France to restore the old order. Burke's pamphlet caused a tremendous stir and mustered many English radicals into launching a counter-attack. Many of these radicals were associated with the London publisher, Joseph Johnson, who published William Blake's poem, The French Revolution, in 1791. An initial response to Burke came from a member of Price's congregation, Mary Wollstonecraft, in her pamphlet, A Vindication of the Rights of Men, published in 1790. She wrote an angry rebuttal of Burke, arguing for what she considered God-given rights of civil and religious liberty. She spoke of the aristocracy that was being displaced in France as decadent, and criticised Burke's sympathy for women of the displaced aristocracy in France, particularly his eulogising of Marie Antoinette, as selective, ignoring the many more thousands of women who suffered under the old regime. She followed this argument with another response in 1791, a vindication of the rights of women. Here, extending her arguments about the need and value of female activism and emancipation. In 1792, she visited France, and this visit resulted in her challenging her own earlier arguments, and she had a more reserved view of the future of France, publishing an historical and moral view of the origin and progress of the revolution, which was an attempt to reconcile her horror at the blood of the terror with her faith in perfectibility. She remained confident, though, that the essence of humanity was good, and that even the chaotic mass could result in a fairer government. Perhaps the most famous response to Burke, though, comes from Tom Paine. Paine was visiting Europe when the great upheaval in France broke out. When he read Burke's pamphlet, Paine immediately flung himself into the fight. But the rights of man was more than just an answer to Burke's arguments. It was also a statement of the philosophy of all democratic movements and has been seen as the fundamental text of modern democracy. In 2 years, it sold over 200,000 copies, making Paine the best-known revolutionary writer of his age. In part one of The Rights of Man, Paine made a distinction between absolute monarchy, or what he called the hereditary despotism of the monarchy, and constitutional monarchy. But by part two, he was maintaining that all traditional forms of government were creatures of imagination, relying on the romantic and barbarous distinction of making men into kings and subjects. By contrast, he saw republican rule as the only natural political structure. In part two, he advocated the abolition of all monarchies and the establishment of democratic republics based on universal manhood suffrage. He also advocated social measures which were far in advance of his time, declaring it was the duty of the state to care for the sick, the young and the old, and that those who received such assistance were entitled to it, not as a matter of grace and favour or of charity, but of right. Much of the historiographical debate about the impact of the French Revolution has been informed by E.P. Thompson's thesis, The Making of the English Working Class. Thompson viewed the 1790s as the crucial period for the formation of working class political consciousness, because of the proliferation of radical societies and also the ideology of Paineite radicalism, which legitimised working class struggle. Many historians have seen the most important aspect of the new radicalism as the provincial dimension. In particular, they note that the most active radical responses came from the important areas of dissent and the emerging commercial activity, especially manufacturing centres such as London, Norwich, Birmingham, Sheffield and Newcastle. In the immediate aftermath of 1789, it looked like there would be a quasi-national reform movement, but this optimism quickly received some major setbacks. In Birmingham, there were vehement anti-dissent riots in 1791, which hounded Joseph Priestley out of Birmingham. There were church and king riots in Manchester and Leicester, which also helped to repress early reform movements. But by the mid-1790s, there were around 80 popular reform societies in England and Wales, the most famous of these being the London Corresponding Society, founded in January 1792, which had as many as 90 divisions at its peak in 1795. Surviving memberships of the London Corresponding Society show the members as being predominantly drawn from London's skilled trades. In Sheffield, the Society for Constitutional Information had 2,000 members by 1792, drawn mainly from independent artisans in the craft metal trades. And in Norwich, there are around 40 small tavern clubs with their own radical intellectual journal called The Cabinet. Most of these societies espoused a radical programme which called for universal suffrage and annual elected parliaments. Some also included economic and social measures. Some of the most radical responses were in Scotland, partly because of the narrowness of the Scottish franchise, but also because of the well-developed intellectual and political culture in Scottish cities. In July 1792, the First Society for the Friends of the People was formed in Edinburgh. 1792 also saw the first general convention of the Friends of the People in Scotland, led by Thomas Muir, an Edinburgh advocate. In June, there were riots in Edinburgh, and representatives of the British government were burned in effigy. Following the French victories at Valmy, trees of liberty were planted in many Scottish towns and cities to demonstrate support for the French cause. The government responded to these radical societies with oppressive measures. The most famous of these is the London Treason Trials of the radical reformers John Hardy, John Thelwell and John Horne Tooke. They were publicly tried on several counts of treason, but were sensationally acquitted because the government couldn't prove they'd done anything that was unconstitutional. However, their victory was short-lived. Faced with the loss of middle-class support after the execution of Louis XVI and the onslaught set of the Terror, and an increasingly repressive British government, the popular reformers had few options open to them. In 1795, the government passed the two acts, one of which, the Seditious Meetings Act, cut the radicals off from their only means of mass agitations and propaganda. Turning to the conservative reaction to the revolution, in some ways, the reaction sprang from the same cause of the radical movement, a pride in the supposed historic liberties and constitution of the British people. The government deliberately encouraged the foundation of loyalist groups, but the sheer scale of the loyalist movement was without precedent in the 18th century. The popular response was helped by the articulation of a conservative ideology, that of Burke's Reflections. Burke's ideas were reinforced by scores of other writers and propagandists, including William Paley, Hannah More and John Reeves. Propagandists like Hannah More were important because they wrote simple but virulently conservative texts designed to appeal to a mass audience and win them round to a patriotic defence of British institutions. More's cheap repository tracts took the form of a series of moral fables, advocating compliance, obedience and patriotism. They sold 2 million copies between 1795 and 1798. Conservative newspapers and periodicals undoubtedly outsold and outnumbered similar literature produced by the radicals. Loyalist associations also produced and distributed their own literature. The Crown and Anchor Association, for example, published around 50 different tracts. The Bull's Head